Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Basketball Addicts Podcast.
Yes, sir.
The one podcast in the world that answers the only question that truly matters is, how you from outside the finals? You can't even get in. How can you get from outside the finals? You can't even get in. And we can't even go there today because we are watching. We are witnessing the NBA Finals right now. Game 2. The Heat took Game 2. The Denver Nuggets won Game 1. So now we're tied 1-1. We have Game 3 starting on June 7th. I believe that is Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday. Wednesday we have Game 3, and me and Jason do not agree on this series at all. And for once, I'm not even going to pass it off. I'm going to start right now. So this is where I'm saying right here. Denver Nuggets in 6, and I'm going to say that they're in 6 because Jimmy Butler is like, he's not your normal star, right? A lot of times when the game matters, you know what I mean? When we've seen LeBron do this, we've seen, you know, Curry. Well, not Curry, because Curry really doesn't really come through in the clutch. Kevin Durant, let's say Booker, Giannis, those type of guys like that. They really like when they get close to winning, they hit a different gear. You know what I mean? Like we saw it in the beginning, like Jimmy Butler was hitting like this different gear. He was like, wow, he's a superstar. You know what I mean? And then he slowly fell off. And here's where I'm saying he fell off at, right? Starting with the Celtics series. I looked it up, did some research. The last game that they won, the Celtics, when they won, beat them 4-3, game 7, Jimmy Butler had 28, I think. I think he had 28 that game, or the game before, and then he's been on a 16-point consistency since then. Yesterday, he had 21. Now, you may be thinking, like, Chris, it's not really bad for him to have 20-something points, but I'm saying, like, if he's a star, you would want him to lead. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? In the sense, you would want him to jump out and say, listen, this is me. This is my team, you know? And I'm not really getting that vibe from Jimmy Butler since they beat the Bucks, since they beat the Knicks. You know what I mean? We start seeing that, and then Celtics, he slowly, I don't know if he got humbled or maybe he got hurt. Maybe there's an injury that we don't know about right now or something like that, but he's not been that player in a while. In a few games now. About 3-4 games, he hasn't been that player. 21's not bad, but for, I mean, like, it has me questioning things, right? And this is where I, this is why I think that Denver are going to win, because you have a decent supporting cast. I get that, but they shouldn't be outscoring your main guy, if you get what I'm saying. Like, Caleb Martin had 23, led all Heat players. I think Bam Adebayo had 21 yesterday. Caleb Martin has been very consistent. This is what I was trying to see, what I kind of want to see out of Jimmy more. I want to see him really take on the role of, this is my team. I'm that guy. I'm going to score these points. I'm going to make sure we win every game. And I'm not really getting that. That's why I feel like, even though you may look at it and say, well, this is great because they were able to win without Jimmy, I feel like if Jimmy can't turn it on soon, they're not going to be able to beat the Denver Nuggets. How many times will Jokic has only lost in a 40-plus point game 3 times? He's dropped 40 and lost 3 times. that doesn't mean that every single time he drops 40, he's going to lose. So you're going to need Jimmy to come forward and step up in these big moments, because the game, just because you got Caleb Martin and you got Duncan Robinson who can get hot, don't mean that every game they're going to show up. But you need Jimmy to show up consistently. You need the consistency from Jimmy that we have not been getting in about 3-4 games. And that's where my worry comes in. But I'm not worried, because I'm a Denver Nuggets fan. I want the Denver Nuggets to win. And I think that they have proven that they can turn it on and be consistent. Jokic has been consistent throughout the entire playoffs. No matter what, he has been that player. Jamal Murray has shown up. He has shown that he is that player. Their supporting cast has shown up. They have been consistent. As long as they can consistency, Denver Nuggets will win the title. I have Denver in 6, and that's the reason why.
All right, do you have anything else before
go ahead.
I move on?
Go ahead.
Okay, so, you know, game one, personally, I feel like that was one of the better losses could have had. Everybody knows that you're going into Denver, game one. There's the oxygen issue. They live in Denver. Like, Denver Nuggets have a legitimate home court advantage with people coming over to play in their home court. The oxygen, the inability to breathe correctly. So going into game one, for them to have a night where they shoot 25% from the three-point line and about 37% from the field and be down by 9 points and hold the game to less than 100 points scored really was a great sign to me, because I talked about previously to the series about pace and how the Miami Heat in the NBA playoffs were going to be able to hold the Denver Nuggets to a lower pace than what they have been using to win and beat teams like the Los Angeles Lakers. You know what I mean? Like the Phoenix Suns, like the Denver Nuggets. A lot of the ways they beat them was pace and allowing their team to play fast and playing up and down the floor and, you know, things of that nature. And in game two, you know, Jimmy did not have a great shooting night. I think he shot like 37% of the field, had 21 points. You know, but he still affects the game greatly with assists, with rebounds, with defending. He's always been great at that. And I can understand where you're coming from, but this is playoff Jimmy we're talking about. This guy has way too much of a long list of time frame of him having dominant playoff series. So I'm not as worried about it as you are, because of the history there, because of the eye test. It doesn't look like he's hurt to me. It just looks like he's in a cold streak. And the fact that they were able to win when he was cold is just so ridiculously impressive to me. And they definitely showed a few things of the Eric Spoelstra's already widening the gap on Mike Malone. A few ways that they're widening the gap on Mike Malone is the kid they drafted from Kansas, 6'6". What's his name? Do you know his name? He's a rotational piece.
What, the Heat drafted from Kansas?
No, Denver.
Denver, hold on. Denver.
He's a gringo.
Nuggets. Denver Nuggets. They drafted him last year?
This year, yeah, it's a rookie. Was not okay. Bruce Brown.
Kansas.
Christian Braun. Yeah, Christian Braun. So, we're talking about Christian Braun. Offensively, he's a good three-point shooter for them, but defensively, I mean, that guy got ridiculously exposed that game. I mean, the amount of times I see Duncan Robinson getting able to cut freely to the basket in situations that he normally wouldn't against an experienced player, and all the off-ball actions that they put him through, and just like literally attacking him as a defender, leading to Gabe Vincent to get like a few free looks at the three-point line. This was a close game. The mistakes Christian Braun had, and the ability for the Miami Heat, I mean, they've put him on Jimmy sometimes and switched him on Jimmy and said, you're the weak link, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because you're a rookie, you're 6'6", but he's not a great athlete, but he's still a rookie, so he's easy to get to make them foul you. He's easy to, you know, be overly intelligent then and to expose, and everybody on the Miami Heat 1 through 12 is ridiculously intelligent and smart. So if they got somebody that's not as smart on the other side, they can and will expose them. And that's what we saw, because it was really rough from Christian Braun defensively. I mean, that was the difference in the game. It was a close game, and that was the difference in the game. Another difference is I think they defended the hell out of Jamal Murray. I had the same idea, and I saw Steve Kerr talking about it on a podcast about game two, and like them coming out with the idea that they're gonna blitz Jamal Murray more, and because Jokic is gonna do what Jokic does, right? Like, you can try to make him a scorer, even though it's going to be really hard to force him to only score throughout a game, even though that's kind of what happened tonight because of how well the Miami Heat guarded the passing lanes. But, you know, Jokic is going to have an amazing impact on the game every single game, offensively. There's nothing you can do to stop him. But Jamal, if you double him, if you blitz him and you try to, you know, if you put a lot of pressure on him, it's going to be harder for him to score. And that's what we saw last night. I mean, other than two bailout threes that, you know, he normally doesn't make late in the game, he had like 13 points with it, like a minute 30 left to go when they needed to chuck up threes to get back into the game. So their strategy worked. And they shut down the Denver Nuggets and their ability to play off Jokic. You know what I mean? They really shut it down. And defensively, they have their number right now. They did it at Denver when the role players, we all know, at home, role players play their best, right? Mm-hmm. They did it at home against Denver, game two, when the role players should be playing their best. They have their formula down. It's going to be a low-paced game. It's going to be a lot of highly intelligent plays. They also make Nikola Jokic run up and down the floor. You see Bam sprinting up and down the floor a lot on purpose to wear Jokic down. They just do so many things. It's not just one thing. Eric Spoelstra has widened the coaching gap. And I understand where you're coming from, Jimmy, but that man has way too many years of him doing great things in the playoffs to not be able to expect him to do it in the next few games. The way that the Miami Heat team, as a team, is so amazing and able to beat them without Jimmy doing his thing like he usually does was just so ridiculously impressive. So, you know, I'm still going Heat in six. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Denver doesn't have a way to counter Spoelstra. It doesn't have X and an O's move to battle Spoelstra that they win the next four. I wouldn't be surprised if they win in five. I know what you're saying, but they have the Denver Nuggets down right now. Like, that was... That was shutting down Denver. You know, even though it may not look on the stat sheet when it comes to Nikola Jokic's stats, but they are accepting the fact that they can't stop that guy. But the way they guarded Jamal Murray, and on top of everything else, Christian Braun, he has to be on the floor. They don't have anybody else to throw out there. It's not like they got a bunch of wings, capable guys that can come off the bench and, you know, take his spot. So he's going to keep on getting exposed. They're going to be able to keep on getting really easy buckets when he's on the floor by exposing him defensively in every single way. On ball, off ball, movements, pick and roll screens, everything. You know, I think it really made a huge difference. And Mike Malone's a good coach, but he's not the kind of coach that can go, you know, strategic battle over a 7-game series with Spoelstra when he's got you in a vice grip like this. And they at Miami Heat have them in a vice grip going back home. You know what I mean? They took home court advantage. So now they're going back home with the strategic things in place right now. It's coaching excellence. You know, I Gabe Vincent, great player. Duncan Robinson had a really great moment last night. You know, hit some really big shots. Max Strus had hit really big shots in the first quarter. So this is a great team that we're watching. And you know, their ability to win when Jimmy's just okay or below average for himself is amazing to me. Doing it at their home court, I don't think it was a fluke in the sense of how hard Denver had it to score. Because this is what I talked about before the series. I talked about how they're going to not let them go in the fast break, and they're going to suffocate them, right? And that's what's happened in Game 2 and Game 1. I mean, they might have lost Game 1, but it was Denver didn't score more than 100 points. Denver didn't score more than, like, 105 in this last game. I think it was, like, 107. 107.
108-111.
Yeah. So, you know, it's about pace. You don't see the fast break stuff as right now coming from Denver because they're just controlling the pace and making them go against their half-court defense, and they're executing better than them. And I just don't see Denver being able to go back and forth with them coaching-wise and be able to execute better than them. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Heat win in 5, but I'm still sticking the Heat in 6.
Denver in 6, the Cinderella story ends now.
What makes you think, with all the history of Jimmy, that he's not going to show up?
He's been cold the last couple games. Like, 21's not bad, but he hasn't really shown me. Like, he hasn't really stepped out. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'll give him one game. I'll say he'll step out, you know, in Miami, and we'll get a game. He'll drop, like, 36, 32, or something like that. But Spoelstra can win the coaching battle, right, with Mike Malone all day, right? That's fine. But he also has to win the coaching battle with Jokic. Jokic is an on-the-floor coach. He's the floor general. The mind he has and the IQ he has for the game of basketball is absurd. You know, like, it's different. It's levels to it. So I'm still giving it to Jokic. I'm thinking, look, I give Jimmy Butler one game in Miami. He's going to drop, like, 36. Then Denver's going to run away with the rest of the series. Denver in 6.
Okay.
Denver in 6, man.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from. Obviously, I disagree.
Yeah.
But, man, that's what this is. Yeah, it makes this podcast fun.
No, I mean, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But me personally, man, I think that we're seeing the differences between the two teams. There's just a gap there.
So, would you agree, though, that Denver's the better team, right?
No. Dear goodness, no. What? No. No, 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 no. Because the better team is the team that wins the series. Stay off the weed! The better team is the team that wins the series.
Yeah, but Denver's the better team.
No, they're not. No, they're not. No, they're not. Okay. No. Because
stay off the weed.
Okay, let me ask you this. By the way they're playing in the series, you might say Jokic is the best player. We'll say Jimmy Butler's the second.
Yeah.
We'll say Jamal Murray's the third.
Yes.
Okay, so then Gabe Vincent, Duncan Robinson, Max Strus.
Is it Caleb Martin?
Caleb Martin, Kevin Love. Oh, we forgot to mention how important Kevin Love was in that last game. Adding size to the floor. Shooting threes. Definitely, because they kind of exposed in game one the switch. And trying to get Aaron Gordon in a lot of good post positions. So having Kevin Love's length out there kind of helped push that away. Like, the way that Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, Max Strus, and Bam are all playing right now are all better than the Nuggets are playing as players. Yeah. Like, it may be because of a coaching advantage, but the players have to execute what the coach is saying. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and they have to be capable of doing what they're doing on the offensive end. And they're a different type of team than the Denver Nuggets, and a team that I believe in more in a general sense anyway. And what I mean by that is I believe in shot creators. I believe that you need shot creators to win NBA championships, playoff games, because their ability to turn zero into one and their ability to not need a schematic scheme that can be shut down by really high-tier coaches, Spoelstra, you know, is a difference here. Gabe Vincent's a shot creator. Caleb Martin's a shot creator. You know what I mean? Like, Max Strus and Duncan Robbins may not be, you know, amazing shot creators, but they're amazing guys off ball. And you know what I mean? And they draw so much attention. So they have more value than just a standstill three-point shooter. And, you know, Michael Porter Jr. is having a weak series. KCP's having a weak series. You know what I mean? And the standstill shooting and that dynamic, I don't believe wins championships as well either. So, you know, I think Miami has the advantage here. Bam's a shot creator for himself as well. You know, Jimmy is too. They got a lot of guys. That's why everybody's like, oh my gosh, watch this guy get hot for a game. Well, they're a shot creator and they're seeing the ball go in the rim and they're just feeling it that night. You know what I mean? And they can become greater than what their names are because that's how their game works. You know what I mean? I understand it's the Miami Heat. I understand that the names aren't that great, but this is a great team. The way they're playing right now, I do think they're the better team. I understand that you think that Denver is the better team, but I think Miami is the better
team. It's just a Cinderella story. It's excitement. It's you know, it gets you like invested because you're like, oh my god, you think the Miami Heat are gonna win, but I'm telling you, Denver has another gear switch that they can hit. And when they do, it's over.
I understand what you're saying. I understand. I think Miami shut down that gear.
No, you haven't seen it yet.
We saw Jokic's best.
What do you mean he saw his best? He did the same thing against Phoenix and they won the series. He lost with 40. He's only done that three times. He's only dropped 40 and lost three times.
Saw his individual best and they lost.
Yeah, just individual best. But team best is different.
I'm saying Miami, in my opinion, has shut off the Denver Nuggets' ability to be their best as a team because of the way they play.
Look, we'll see. We'll see at the end of this six-game series when the Denver Nuggets raise the title.
Yeah, we'll definitely see it when the Miami Heat win that title, man.
Yeah, no. We'll see when we see Denver and Jokic get a ring, and Jamal Murray gets a ring, KCP has two rings, you know, and then the Miami Heat fall back to fifth place next year.
Yeah, they only show up in the playoffs.
They show up in the playoffs.
The rest of the time, really? They just disappear from the world.
They do disappear. They do disappear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, though, we gotta give them a ton of credit. Like,
for sure.
The Miami Heat for getting this far and like having so much belief as a team culture, you know what I mean? The ability to draft undrafted players and develop them like they do is kind of unseen. Like, there's no other franchise that's doing what they do. Most teams get most of their great players from the draft, first round draft picks. You know, think about all the teams that are tanking, you know what I mean, to try to get high draft picks because that's the only way they can develop them. Like, it's insanity to have so many guys that are undrafted players be this good, but it's a great example of their great organization, great development of talent, ability to identify talent that's being missed by in the draft, and developing guys that fit their culture within all that too. You know what I mean? So it's pretty amazing what's happening. I can't remember a time where there's been a team so great organizationally that they've been able to produce so many, like so many quantity of high quality role guys. And it's just really impressive to see.
Well, I mean, Spurs. In recent memory, Spurs, I can think of Spurs.
Yeah, but I meant from an undrafted sense. That's where it's
okay, yeah, it's true. Yeah. I get you.
Yeah.
Spurs are really good with the late draft picks, those sleeper guys.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. They do draft good, really good role players, even to this day.
They do.
That's why they suck.
But I do want to say, like, yeah, I completely I agree with you though, that that the Miami Heat do need, like, you know, they do deserve, like, you know, credit, a lot of credit, considering that their road to the finals wasn't the normal road to the finals. They had to play two play-in games.
Yeah.
Then they got matched up against the number one seeded Milwaukee Bucks. Beat them somehow.
Yeah.
Then cakewalked to the Celtics.
Oh, yeah, cakewalking. Mm-hmm.
Beat them somehow.
Yeah.
And now they're playing the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals.
Yes.
They have a serious chip on the shoulder, and look, in some cases, that could lead you somewhere, but I mean, like, they just get the credit, because Spo is a fantastic coach. He has to go down all time now, especially if they win.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm not expecting them to win, but if they win, he's all time now. I mean, he was already all time, but he moves up that list, in my opinion.
Okay.
He has to be, like, top five, at least. Curious.
Okay, I'm gonna throw out names, top five coaches, mm-hmm. just to see where he'd move to. Okay, is he gonna be better than Greg Popovich?
No, not yet.
Okay, so it wouldn't be one, in my opinion.
Pop is one in your opinion?
Oh yeah, Pop's one in my opinion. It's ridiculously rare for a coach to be able to change his schemes depending on the talent of the team, like Pop does.
Yeah. So it's always one. What about Red Auerbach?
He'd definitely be on the list.
He's 11.
I would probably... Yeah, it can't be better than Red.
He can't be ready than Red. He has 11.
He was so great at identifying talent, too. You know what I mean?
He's 11.
So, I don't know. He might have been a better talent scout than he was a head coach, but it's really hard to tell.
Yeah,
because they did a great job scouting talent back then, and they definitely had more talent than everybody else, which was due to his eye. So
very true.
It's hard to know which one he was more amazing at, but we'll leave Red above him, just because it's hard to determine which was which.
So Red, Pop.
Okay, what about Spoelstra? I mean, not Spoelstra, Kerr. That's tough, right?
That's tough. So wait, so you put Kerr 3? What about,
I'm just throwing
Phil Jackson.
Oh, God. You're throwing names out. You're right. Yeah. Phil Jackson's 2 for me. Okay, so.
Okay, wait. What's your top 5? I know where you're kind of getting off track, but what's your top 5? I'll give you my top 5.
Okay. My top 5 coaches of all time would be Pop 1. It would be Phil Jackson 2. I mean.
Uh-huh.
That triangle offense he ran was ridiculous.
Revolutionized basketball. Go ahead.
I probably put Red 3. I'd put Steve Kerr 4 because of the recent blunder. I used to probably have him 3, but you know, it seems like he might be a little rigid to that system. And not being able to fit the talent within the system correctly. So, and then I'm going to go 5 Spoelstra. You know what I mean? I used to have guys like AC Green here. Pat Riley was a very common choice for that. He did great things with the New York Knicks as well. In the Miami Heat as well as like a coach. I used to have... Yeah, those two guys, George Karl would be in the conversation. I can't think of another guy that coached forever who did a really good job, coached the Atlanta Hawks, and when he had Dominique Wilkins. Lenny Wilkins. Mm-hmm. Lenny Wilkins was a great coach for a long time. Always made his team the best they could be. So that's what I would say my top five is. What do you think? What's yours?
That's a decent top five. We have virtually the same. It's just that it's a little bit of switched of the one through five. Because you can't, like, I feel like you can't have a top five if you don't include these five. So it's just going to be a different order. Red 1.
Ooh, okay.
Pop 2.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson 3.
Mm-hmm.
Spo 4. Okay. 5 Kerr.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Like, I feel like you can't have a top five if they're not in your top five. You know, like, I just feel like it's... You know, or, yeah. like, because Phil Jackson's been coaching for a long time, so, like, you'd be like, who did he coach? He coached the greats. So, you, like, he coached Jordan. He coached Kobe and Shaq. I mean, Jordan and Pippen. So, it's like, if you look at, who was the coach when Kobe won all the rings? Phil Jackson. So, it's like, you might as well, like, he has to go on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Phil Jackson's ability to fit that, because in each team the talent was so different, right? Like, Mike's a great scoring two guard, which may be like, okay, Mike and Kobe is similar, but Scottie Pippen's like a point forward that he had to fit within that offense, which he did very well. And then he had no center with the Bulls, and then you go to Shaq, which is like a world-class center, one of the greatest centers of all time, running a system on him and Kobe and all the role players. And then he had to go from that to, like, a Pau Gasol, power forward, mid-range, shooting, nice passer, highly skilled post guy with, like, kind of a Swiss Army knife of offensive abilities, scoring-wise, where he could kind of score from every level, which, you know, wasn't, like, a perfect fit into the Triangle offense, but he made the talent fit, you know what I mean? So... Yeah. That's why I really believe that even though Phil Jackson always ran the same principles as a system, his ability to fit that system to multiple different types of players was really impressive.
So, you know what? I have a question, right? The thought popped into my mind. Could LeBron fit the triangle?
Oh, dear goodness, yes. A motion offense that's meant to make passing easier? Yeah, yeah. Dear goodness, yes. I mean, he'd be Scottie Pippen, except better.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, top five. Top five. Spo will be 4 for me, though, honestly. Like, without a doubt, Spo will be number 4.
Yeah. I definitely feel like all of these coaches are in a different league, except maybe Pat Riley might be within this group too.
It would be Pat Riley.
Yeah, I mean, but like the eye test of these coaches is they separate themselves to a very high degree in their own group. These five, and the way that they make their team the best team that they can be, maximizing all the talent there to an even higher degree than what anybody thought, you know what I mean? Like, when he got Michael, everybody thought Michael was not a championship player, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that was the thing that was like, oh, he just only cares about scoring, you know what I mean? And he got 6 rings out of that guy. I mean, and Shaq had a similar thing where people called him soft and his style of play can never win rings and he can never be in shape enough to win rings. And he got the very best out of Shaq, right?
Yeah,
and he got the very best out of Kobe, who had a similar thing after Shaq, you know, got done playing. People were like, oh, okay, Kobe's a inefficient guy. He needed Shaq to win rings. He'll never do it again. And he's maximized the talent. You know what I mean? Like, he's special. And all of these coaches are like that. Red Auerbach has 11 rings, maximizing the Boston Celtics talent. You know what I mean? Greg Popovich has a bunch of rings, being able to maximize the talent on the team and building different teams. Like, they went through the Twin Towers phase, 2 post players. Then it went around Tim Duncan, okay? And then Tony Parker and Mono became better players. And then became, okay, well, Tim Duncan will get the ball, but then I'll use Tony Parker and Mono to their best abilities to win rings. And then later in their career, it was about ball movement and passing because they had so many three-point shooters and good passers like Patty Mills and Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard when they were beating the Miami Heat. So You know, each coach on this list does amazing things of maximizing the talent on their team to a degree that other coaches just can't do. So, you know, that's where they separate themselves. There's a gap there.
Yeah. That's true. But can we agree that if we don't put Pat Riley in the top five, he's at least number six?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, without a doubt.
I mean, he did a great job because nobody had played like Magic before Magic, right? Like, he had, he built a whole system correctly around Magic. As Kareem was going downhill, he gave Magic the reins more offensively. He did a great job with that team. I know it was talented, but he got everybody to work together correctly. And, you know, they got, he brought that toughness mentality that they also needed to beat the Celtics, who were extremely tough. And what he did with the New York Knicks, I mean, dear goodness, getting a team to the NBA Finals, Patrick Ewing couldn't get to the NBA Finals without him. You know, that team wasn't that great. It had Allen Houston. It had that one enforcer that I can't think of his name right now. And that team was just very subpar talent-wise, but they played ridiculously physical, and he got everybody to work together. And then you go into Miami, and the way that he got that team always playing the best that they could as well. I mean, Pat Riley's on this level as well. He's coaching Berlin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah. Number six.
Yeah. And there, it's not even close between guys six and seven. Like, George Karl's not close. Lenny Wilkinson's not close. You know, it, those guys are not close. There's nobody really close to those six. Those six are in a different.
Oh, for sure, that's why they're the top six.
Yeah. And Spoelstra's in that group, man. Spoelstra's amazing. Just so impressive. It's just amazing to see.
So, I want to do something a little different, right?
Okay.
We normally already predict the game, right? We predict the series, actually. But let's predict the game.
Okay.
Game three tomorrow, right? You think the Heat will win. I believe the Heat might win as well.
Yeah.
But because I'm giving them at least one game.
Yeah.
What? How much do you think the Heat will score?
108?
108 again? You think?
They're going to hold Miami to about 100? This is about, very predictable. They play the same style of basketball every time. It's not like, oh, wow, one guy's, you know, this is the Golden State Warriors. Ooh, I wonder, tonight. They get it hot. Maybe it's 120, 125. You know, no. The Miami Heat play their style, and it's going to be around the same points every game.
Fair.
Yeah, they're going
to
win at home.
I give Denver 115 to 120.
Really?
Yeah. If the Denver Nuggets win, it's going to be 115 to 120.
Oh, yeah, if they win. Yeah, I think they're going to. We can agree to disagree, Chris.
I don't know, because I just feel like...
The reason why I think 3-1 is possible, I mean 4-1 is possible, is because the Miami Heat will get two home games, if I'm not mistaken, back-to-back. And I wouldn't be surprised if they sweep both their home games. Because their role players are going to play better than what they've been playing before. You know what I mean? And they already, I think, in my eye test wise, they've been the better team for the first two games and just shot really poorly in game one. So, that's why I think I wouldn't be surprised if they win in five. Because of, I wouldn't be surprised if they go 3-1 right now. It's just, I understand.
I'm not leaving Miami 3-1.
I understand what that you are. You think Denver's gonna win? That's what makes the podcast fun. But I think there's a chance that they're going back to Denver 3-1.
Okay, look, this is my prediction, right? Wednesday, right? 2-1 Denver. The Miami Heat tied up on the 15th. Is that what it is? Or the 13th? The 13th. Miami ties it up on the 13th. They go back to Denver. Denver sweeps the next two games. Denver 4-2. Denver in 6.
All right. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
I like how the natural conversation went to an unplanned area with the head coach, so I think that was good
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we got to give Spo his credit. I mean, what he's now and earlier in his career. I mean, he wasn't as great with, like, the LeBron years, which kind of makes me sad. Because, like, mm-hmm. what if you had Spo today with young LeBron? You'd be like, oh, my God. But,
yeah,
you know, and also, this is a great example to other teams in the league. Your 1 year, two of a guy's coaching career might be not be world class, but if you give him enough time, a lot of these guys can develop into, like, a Spoelstra. You know what I mean? He's been given so many years and so much trust over there in Miami. And, you know, they're kind of like Boston, where they understand how to develop coaches and not be reactionary and allow their coaches to grow and develop with time. You know what I mean? They do a great job of that.
Yeah.
They have a great understanding of that, just like Boston does. So it's great to see. A lot of more NBA franchises should take that model.
Yeah, because I'm against the firing of coaches, but I'm sorry, Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah, they hired Ime. They did. They would have. It's not like they would have. Oh, year one, he takes his NBA finals. Ah, fuck him. Fire him first. Right? Like, no.
Right.
Ime would have stayed if it wasn't for the off-season shenanigans. So.
Right.
Here we are.
Exactly. That's here we are. But, yeah. I'm very against the firing of coaches. I feel like, and I said this before on previous episodes where I was going off about how I'm tired of coaches being fired. You mm-hmm. know, like, they what happens is they have a star. Yep. Instead of blaming the star for underperforming, they blame the coach, fire him after he went. Like, that's why coaches don't feel any loyalty to teams. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I would stop caring either. About the Coach of the Year award because it doesn't matter. Because how am I the best coach for a whole entire year and get fired? Dwayne Casey. Case in point. How does that happen?
No.
Just because I can't beat LeBron is my fault? Like,
yeah.
That's what happened. LeBron got that man fired. He hasn't recovered since.
True.
But yeah. It's so, been a lot of coach firings, so.
Is there anybody news on who the Suns are hiring?
Yeah, so I don't know if you heard or not, but Frank Vogel is like the front runner, or he's been hired by the Suns to be their coach. I sent you the clip, I thought.
Wait, no.
Yeah, I sent you the clip. Check your phone. I sent you the clip like a couple days ago.
Kevin Young on Frank. Oh my God, you're right. They hired Frank fucking Vogel.
Yep, Frank Vogel as the head coach of the Phoenix Suns.
Do you not know that he only knows defense? What the hell?
This is what they're trying to do. They're trying to get him to teach them guys defense over there. Oh, and Monty Williams went to Detroit.
Who's the defender? Yeah, Monty going to Detroit makes sense, though. I mean, rebuilding, he's not going to be pressured to win right now. He can go hide Steven away and Silas do a great job. Assistant? Yeah.
And I think Steven Silas is the assistant there.
Yeah, I saw that, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get Steven Silas to develop some more, but Frank fucking Vogel! You fire Monty Williams, who's a world-class coach. A guy who took that team into the bubble, got really hot with them, developed the young talent, got Devin Booker to play with winning basketball, built a system around CP3 and Devin Booker, led that team to a world-class one seed, NBA Finals. I mean, that team. They hired Frank fucking Vogel, man. That guy can't coach. Let's just get out here and say, especially offensively. Like, that guy is a terrible offensive coach. He doesn't understand how to team. And when your team is the Phoenix Suns with Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, who none of them are great defenders, or they're all, like, kind of above average, average-ish, you needed to hire a coach that was a good offensive guy to make their offense, you know, gel and work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's amazing that they hired fucking Frankel. I mean, that's... If you want to have him as your top assistant to run their defense, cool. But he shouldn't be touching the fucking offensive end at all. This is ridiculous. I can't believe it.
Yeah. Frank Vogel is the head coach of the Phoenix Suns. And, I mean, off talent, they'll make it to the playoffs, but they probably won't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, man.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. This is wild. Firing Monty for fucking Frank Vogel, man, is ridiculous.
And Budenholzer still doesn't have a job.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Budenholzer goes to what's his base? Boston. But
They already said they're not firing Joe Mazzulla.
Really?
Yeah, they said they're gonna stick by him. They said they're gonna give him another. They're gonna stick by him. They're not gonna fire him right away.
Wow.
So Budenholzer, he still doesn't have a job, and
there's like no I hope job he's opens. Not.
Yeah, no job, no job. Maybe he doesn't want to coach right now because maybe he doesn't want to coach. Maybe he's done for a little bit.
Maybe he goes to the Wizards.
I mean, yeah, if they offer him a job or something like that, but. But I think that he might be wanting to step away from basketball for a little bit. This is my thought. Because I haven't heard him in any, like, rumors. Like, since he was fired, I haven't heard him in any rumors about a possible head coach. Like, nothing. Like, yeah. And Budenholzer won a ring. So, I mean, like, you would want that championship pedigree. He's probably, like, not taking calls. He probably doesn't want to coach right now.
Yeah. It's wild.
Probably take some time off to spend with family. Because considering that he just lost a... very close family member is hard to recover from that right away.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So.
Yeah. He shouldn't have. He shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have done that with Milwaukee firing him.
Yeah.
They made mistakes, them and Phoenix. Really bad mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, this might be. Something that I talked about before with you about Giannis is, you know what I mean? Like, that core of that team is old. They're older than Giannis. Yeah. So, there's going to come a point in time where they're not going to be a championship team anymore because the pieces are not going to be the same. And if Budenholzer is not there as well, this might be 3 or 4 years from now when he may leave, this might be the first, you know, crack in the armor. This was the first mistake that was made, which is firing Budenholzer. Yeah. He's a really great coach. I mean, I don't consider him a top 5 coach, but definitely 8 to 12. He learned from his mistakes. You know, most coaches don't do that. He grew. Budenholzer built that winning system that they have right now. So it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah. It's very sad, and yeah. I'm just tired of seeing these type of headlines where people are getting fired and after they give their heart and soul to an organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, hey. I couldn't agree more. I have no clue where he's going to go, but I'm sure he'll find a spot. Either he waits a year or he takes a year off, or he goes and coaches somewhere. It's a crazy year.
Yeah. When is the draft? When is the draft? Is that coming up
22nd.
Soon? 22nd of this month?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know something crazy? Wow. I'll tell you off podcast.
What?
Off podcast. I'll tell you off podcast. Do you want me to tell you on the podcast?
Uh-huh. Yeah, tell me.
Okay. So as you guys know, I do NBA draft stuff. And, like, I had 64 guys already scouted. And 15 of them pulled out, like, of the guys, especially in second round. I had one guy at 16 on my board. He went back to college, too. Taylor Chen, really high on him. But,
wow.
Like, so I have, like, a completely been like, oh my gosh, totally new guys in the second round. I gotta watch a bunch of guys now, so I've been super busy. But we're gonna give you that great content still. I definitely think part of it is the NIL deals. These guys get to pay, mm-hmm. get paid in college, and if they're not really gonna be sure that when they get drafted, they're gonna make the NBA. You know, I would stay in college too, right? I would stay in college until you're a senior. So I think that's part of it. And, you know, the transfer portal as well. I mean, there's specifically one guy from Richmond who's a little slower, but shoots the hell out of the three ball. It's like 6'6", 6'7". That was going to probably go late second round or be undrafted. But now he's playing at Villanova, right? And he's going to get a chance to prove himself more. And he's going to get paid big money by Villanova if it doesn't work out NBA-wise. So I definitely think that the depth of the second round will never be the same again because of the NIL deals. But I think it's good for the players because I think they should develop their best potential before going to the NBA.
Yeah. That's true. I wouldn't mind seeing him stay and develop a little more in college. What's that one guy? Isn't his name like Imani Bates? Isn't he entering the draft this year?
Yeah, he is.
That should be interesting.
He's definitely a... Everybody has very controversial opinions on him. He's anywhere from 20 to like 60 in NBA mock drafts.
Wow.
People have very different views.
Hmm.
I wish we could be talking about the NBA draft right now, but I'm not gonna give away the scoops.
Man, don't give it away. Don't give away too much. Don't give away too much.
You can hear the player breakdowns whenever we drop that stuff for draft, which is gonna be exciting. Top 30 big board. Definitely gonna want to check it out.
All right.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about, Chris?
No, I'm pretty much done. I think we pretty much covered everything so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think we covered all the news right now.
Alrighty. So, just want to say thank you all for listening yet again, for tuning in, for following, liking, and subscribing, and doing all that good stuff. Yes. We really definitely appreciate that. You know, everything you guys do as far as commenting and, you know, any type of interaction, we all greatly appreciate it. And we see you, we appreciate you, we notice you. Just want to say Denver in six. All right. My name is
Chris Mohammed. And I'm Jason Collins, and the Miami Heat are winning in six.
No, they're not. We are the best ones. Peace.
Ouch.